We can go ahead and get started. We're probably going to have a lot to talk about, a lot of questions. So thanks so much for joining this Objectivist Perspective on the Election with Atlas Society scholars Richard Salzman and Rob Trzezinski. You know, we have two objectivists with two different takes on the elections and the political choices before us. But I think this is a perfect example of open objectivism in action with civil debate and discussion between diverging views. I mean, it's open objectivism where, you know, disagreements can be discussed with benevolence and toleration instead of someone wailing, you know, you're not a real objectivist. So
I'm the one who gets called an obleftivist because I'm not, you know, I'm not agreeing with the far right. I want to say that, you know, this is called an objectivist perspective on the election, but it's probably going to be more than one objectivist perspective on the election. And, you know, political parties are not philosophies, right? Elections are not philosophical. Well, they have philosophical issues involved in them, but they, you know, they are concrete events that can be interpreted in different ways. And, you know, there's a lot of scope for disagreement about what the context is and what the significance of something is.
Good. Well,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, in that spirit, I appreciate you both offering your perspectives. I was going to suggest each of you make an opening statement, and then we'll open it up to questions and even let you two interact your differences.
Yeah. Okay. So if it's okay with Richard, I'd kind of like to take the point on this on going out first, because
sure.
You know, I'm the guy who covers elections, I think, more so than anybody else here. So I would just want to do a little overview of what I see as the results, and then give some context behind that. All right. So if no objections, so ordered. So I want to start with what the election result was. And the result, as I see it, is nobody really won. Now, a lot of people think, oh, it's a big, you know, it's a big victory that a lot of people on the Democratic side are very jubilant, but it's only a victory for them in the context of the fact that they were expecting to get creamed. Right, they were expecting a massive loss, and so not losing seems like a victory. And this is sort of the expectations game that you have in politics, right? That if everybody expects you to lose and you barely hang on by your fingernails, that seems like a great win for you. But if everybody expects you to win and you win by a tiny little margin, then it makes you look bad. So this makes Democrats look good only by contrast to. It's a great result for them only by contrast to the fact that everybody, you know, a day or so, two ago, was talking about the idea there was going to be a red wave, and it was going to be like 2010, where like 60 new Republican congressmen were elected to the House of Representatives. This is going to be like, what, 10, 15 new Republicans in the House of Representatives. So let me go over what those results are, actually, so you can get a sense of that. So it's looking right now. Now, there's a few things that are still hanging out there in Arizona. It looks like it's not going the Republican way of Arizona. It might go the Republican way in Nevada. There's going to be a runoff in Georgia. So there's some stuff still up in the air. But the overall picture that's looking like the most likely result from all of this is that in the Senate, we're going to go back to exactly where we were before. It's looking like it's going to end up being a 50-50 Senate. 50 Democratic votes, and you know they get to control the Senate with the absolute bare minimum necessary to control the Senate, which is 50 votes plus the tie-breaking vote from the vice president. So they end up pretty much where they've been, which is barely having enough people to pass legislation and not be able to pass anything too controversial or too different, because they have to appease the two most conservative members of the Democratic caucus in the Senate, you know, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. So they have very little ability to do anything. And it's going to be even less like the Republicans are now going to have control of the House. But the Republicans, that's just a small gain. The latest projection I saw, people were saying the most likely result is they'll have 222 votes in the House, 222 seats in the House. And to put that in perspective, a majority in the House, like, you know, the simple bare majority necessary to get to have more votes than the other guy, is 218. So they have only like four votes to spare that they got the majority. And, you know, what it's like in Congress is if you've got a half dozen congressmen that you need to get on your side to pass anything, you know, it's really easy to find a half dozen guys who are mavericks or independent or who think they're going to be in trouble in their district if you pass something. It gets very hard for you to pass any legislation. So what you have is you have one part of Congress in the hands of one party that has a tiny, bare minimum majority. Another party that has the other house of the legislature that also has a tiny, bare bones majority that can't really do anything. And that's why I think the real upshot in this is on the national level, at least, nobody won. Everybody got just enough power to block the other guy, but not enough power to actually do anything. And I think that's awesome. I think that's almost an ideal response. I think gridlock is a great idea. And the reason I think it's awesome, and I want to return to this in a bit, is that I think it's awesome because I don't trust either party to do the right thing. I don't trust either party to have a pro-liberty agenda. So I think it's great in a way that they'll be sitting around there, you know, they'll be making speeches, they can hold hearings, they can do uncontroversial stuff that gets, you know, broad bipartisan support. But any big new thing they want to do is basically they're doomed. They can't do it because they don't have that kind of majority. And I think that's great because neither side has a pro-liberty agenda. And I think the big question I'd like us, Richard and I, to discuss, the one I think where we're going to be most in agreement, is on the question of, well, why not? Why don't we have why isn't there a side that we can really unreservedly root for as having a pro-liberty agenda?
Just to register that,
yeah,
that's not my view. So you should just present your view and not guess. All right. Guess what we'll agree on or not. So just
okay.
I don't want to misrepresent people, you know, during your sessions.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. All right. So one of the big stories as I see of this election is that this was an election full of bad choices. Right. So I think the one that sticks in my mind is Dr. Oz versus Fetterman in Pennsylvania, where you had this, you know, Fetterman, this guy who has fairly far left views, but also, you know, suffered a stroke right at the beginning of the general election campaign. I don't think there's evidence that he's cognitively impaired, but he had difficulty speaking. So he's kind of like a guy recovering from a stroke trying to run for office, which is kind of, there's almost a comical aspect to that. But at the same time, you got the other guy is this, you know, guy who's been this whole 20-year career of basically hawking fake miracle cures on daytime television. So you have these two extremely uninspiring candidates. Similar, I think, in Georgia, where they're going to have a runoff. They're going to have the same matchup between the two uninspiring candidates in a couple of weeks. And that is where you have Warnock, the Democrat, is a guy whose his background is in sort of black liberation theology. It's very far left religious Christian view. But this guy, but Herschel Walker is a guy who, you know, was found to be, he's taking the Republican line on abortion and having a, you know, we should make abortion illegal. And it turns out that he has, you know, paid for one of his many mistresses to abort a child. So, you know, total hypocrisy, totally, you know, in any reasonable matchup, this guy, neither one of these guys would be an acceptable alternative. And I think that sort of sums up a lot of what happened in this election. There were a lot of ones where you had people, you know, there were a lot of really unpalatable, unsavory matchups. And that's what the issue that I at least would like to discuss, which is, why is it that we don't have a pro-liberty party, and why is it we have such a terrible politics where we get these sort of ambitious hucksters who get put forward as the potential representatives and the potential candidates, and not people who are, you know, we don't get anybody on, even within the same universe as the founding fathers. You know, we don't get it's not Thomas Jefferson versus John Adams, right? To take a matchup that, you know, is two great men and powerful intellects who are both extremely dedicated to liberty. they had knockdown to drag out disagreements, but you know, as human beings and as thinkers and as on a moral level, they're in a different universe compared to what we get today. So I think that's something to bring up as we go. Then the last small thing I want to say is the thing that I found the best part of the election, the reason I'm generally happy with this election, is I do think that the one trend you saw is that the people who were engaging in the sort of election conspiracy theory, saying that the 2020 election were stolen, and who were putting themselves, trying to put themselves in a position where they could overturn, you know, who had advocated overturning the election results in places like Arizona and Michigan, people who are trying to get in a position to be able to overturn the election results in the future if they had similar sort of unfounded claims that the elections were stolen, those candidates generally lost. I mean, the big example is Mark Finchem. I think it's Mark Finchem, who is the guy running for Secretary of State in Arizona. Secretary of State is the office that runs elections. And this was the guy who, you know, had indulged in a lot of stolen election conspiracy theories. When challenged on them by the press, he couldn't actually name a specific reason why he thought the election was stolen. But he was convinced it was stolen and had vowed basically that he would overturn the results of 2020 if he could, or that he would, you know, not allow this to happen again, that he might overturn the results of future elections. And those people generally lost their elections. And I think that's a very positive development, because it takes that issue of having people doing shenanigans with the voting, of people trying to say, oh, well, you know, here's the vote totals and I'm going to throw them out and put a different slate of electors, send it into Washington. It kind of takes that off the table for the next election. And that's a huge relief to me. All right. So that's my view, that I view that as positive, because nobody won. Nobody gets to do anything for the next 2 years. And I think that neither party really deserves to be allowed to do anything for the next 2 years.
All right, great. Richard, go ahead.
Well, Rob said nobody really won, and he thinks that's great and awesome. My take is that the Democrats won, and that's awful. And apropos his question of why do we have such bad politics, such unsavory matter, Alexander Hamilton said it correctly. Our disease is democracy. So democracy is just ruled by the people. Demos just means people. It doesn't say whether they're smart people. It doesn't say whether they're virtuous people. It's just people. And if you know the history of democracy, it can be very brutal to individual rights. The Democratic Party of today is brutal to individual rights. And I note that before the election, Rob recommended that everybody vote across the board for Democrats only. My recommendation was that they only vote for Republicans. So there could not be a more distinct difference just in terms of advice. I'm 63 years old. I cannot think of a two-year period so awful in governance in America as the last 2 years. So I would include inflation, although I think Trump was partly responsible for that, crime, the rule of lawlessness, as I call it, the border, completely open and no controls there at all. One of the bad things, I think, actually is Roe v. Wade being overturned as to who's responsible for that. And this yet another war in proxy war against Russia. Rob and I have talked about that before. To me, these are totally due to the Democrats, or almost primarily due to the Democrats. They should have been punished this election. They really weren't punished. I don't agree, actually, that there'll be gridlock over the next 2 years. There will be more Democrats, not maybe doing as bad as they did in the last 2 years. But one thing that will, I believe, happen is, to the extent there's gridlock, everybody knows that presidents have far greater discretion in foreign affairs. So even though the war, the proxy war against Russia, was not on the ballot this time, I think that will dominate the next couple of years, because Biden knows that's where he gets support from the Republican Party. By the way, not from the Trump wing of the Republican Party, which Rob considers to be authoritarian and, you know, Chavez-like. It's the Trump candidates who basically said, stop sacrificing American interests and treasure in long foreign wars that are not in our self-interest. So I'm dismayed and disappointed about the results. I have a very different take as to why the results are what they are. Rob thinks it's mostly due to rejecting Trump endorsed candidates. I don't think that's true. But I just didn't want to, I just didn't want to register the fact that this is a very bad result. The Republican Party has better candidates, higher quality candidates across the board. The only one I actually opposed was J.D. Vance in Ohio, and he won. J.D. Vance is a complete phony, a populist who I don't trust to throw 10 feet. But that's about the only one. All the others, and you mentioned Fetterman and Oz. I mean, whatever Oz was, he was far superior to Fetterman. And Fetterman seems to have barely beat him. But the fact that the Democrats would put up a Marxist who wants to let out all the murderers and is challenged mentally is beyond the pale. I mean, there is just talk about quality of candidate. It's just ridiculous. And that Walker is not superior to Warnock. In both of those cases, by the way, the incumbent won. And that's what needs to be remembered. It is very difficult to unseat incumbents. First of all, they've already demonstrated an ability to govern, and that's not irrelevant. But secondly, they have a lot of financial backing and a lot of other advantages. So it's always going to be difficult for quote-unquote rookies to win the first time out. And many of the ones who did not win are in that category. And it's not because they were election deniers endorsed by Trump, as Rob has suggested in his recent writings. It's that they're largely rookies, and they still performed amazingly well. Even someone who had been in office, Zeldin, almost really closely challenged the New York governor. Dixon in Michigan didn't do badly against Whitmer. Whitmer, who was a complete fascist, the governor of Michigan, if you know what she did during the lockdowns, it was almost worse than what Newsom did and what Pritzker did in Illinois. Just really fascistic type stuff. And let me throw out three or four possible explanations, and Rob mentioned some of them. We can talk more about this. I don't think it was candidate quality. I think, as I said before, the Republicans' party and its platform is so superior to the Democrats that should not be a question. And I don't even think their candidates are inferior. I think they're quite superior. Now, another thing would be, well, they were just wrong on the issues. Well, if they focused on what voters said they cared about, namely, and I'd say it in order, the salience aspect, and inflation, crime, border, maybe down the list in election integrity. Abortion was down the list as well. War wasn't even discussed. But if a candidate discussed those issues and was on the right side, they did well. And the issue of people focusing on election fraud, you know, some of them did, but the problem was not that they focused on election fraud. The problem was that to the extent they were talking about that, they weren't talking about salient issues. More salient issues, put it that way. They weren't talking enough about inflation, crime, and the border. I would also say that in many ways, these issues are tough to win on locally. For example, what are you going to do about inflation? I mean, if you're just a senator, one of 100, or one of 435 reps, you're not at the Federal Reserve. You're not doing the entire budget. So even if people were right about what caused inflation, which they're not always right about, but even if they were right and knew it was due to the Fed, it's a very tangential thing to say, I'm going to go to Washington to fight inflation. I mean, you'd have to fight Jay Powell and the Fed commissars. I think even crime was tough because crime is basically due to mayors. It's mayors. I mean, there weren't a lot of mayoral races. We're talking about senators, governors, others. The most crime-ridden cities in America are run by Democrats. And people keep running for keep voting for them. And again, Rob said, vote only for Democrats. You're voting for the most crime-ridden cities in the country if you go that route. I think even the border was tough. Again, the Democrats are wrong, terribly wrong on all these things. The question is whether the Republicans can turn it to advantage. Even on the border, even if most Americans are disgusted by what's going on down there, I think most of them think, and probably rightly, it mostly affects Texas, Arizona, and Florida. But Texas, Arizona, and Florida had Republican governors doing very well. DeSantis blew doors in Florida. The first time he won by only one percentage point. This time he won by 20. Abbott, I think, won by a smaller percentage last time. This time he beat Beto O'Rourke, that phony, by about 11 percentage points. I do believe Kari Lake is probably going to edge out in Arizona, which is amazing because Kari Lake was basically a Fox News anchor. But a self taught. Now this is a rookie, basically politically a rookie. The fact that she would be neck and neck with an incumbent, basically the Secretary of State Hobbs, as she's running against, would be an enormous pickup if that were true. But I mean, it shows the quality. That is a high quality candidate, even though she's basically a citizen, a politician if she gets there. Now, okay, so I went through, is candidate quality the issue? It can't be, because that would have given Republicans an absolute landslide. So that is not what people are focusing on, I don't think. And on the issues, I just went through the issues and the problem there. Election fraud. Rob in his writings really highlights election fraud. There are not that many Republicans who are focused on that, but I think it's interesting because the way Rob puts it is he calls them election deniers. No one denies that there are elections. So election deniers is just this kind of silly description of it. Now, are they election fraud deniers? No, they're pointing out that there is election fraud. And there certainly is election fraud. Now, the third level would be, is election fraud so rampant that it's actually materially changing the outcome of elections? Now, that I don't actually think is true. It might be true in one or two states, but I don't believe that's true. But I also don't find most Republican candidates saying that. It's a very small number. And so I think that is really just a incorrect reading of what the results of this election are. And Rob and I differ enormously on that. And by the way, even if you're a full-fledged, full-throated advocate of democracy, as Rob seems to be, and I am certainly not. The reason I'm not is democracy often leads to tyranny. And so I know Rob is saying he wants liberty, but the Democrats in the current form do not deliver liberty, and the Republicans are more likely to deliver it. So I think a third or fourth possibility might be the electorate really has been changed over the last few decades. I mean, the public schools, the government schools have really indoctrinated people to the point where they find the Democrats just fine. And America is losing her liberty accordingly. So to me, the primacy is not democracy. Democracy is a means to an end. It's the way to vote for our representatives. But the end should be government upholding liberty and individual rights. And the Democrats are not for those things. The Republicans are for those things weakly. I don't mean on the calendar. I mean not strongly enough. They're for those things inconsistently. The main fault I have with the conservatives and Republicans, and this could go on the list also for reasons they didn't do so well, is abortion. But I think I have found that the Republican Party is becoming more and more liberal on abortion. Thankfully, they're becoming more liberal on abortion. But that doesn't seem to have been a big issue. Rob hasn't even mentioned it in his writings recently. So let me just sum up. I think the ideal that we should be working toward is a constitutionally limited government that protects our individual rights, point one. Point two, weak as and bad as the both parties are, the Republicans are far superior in terms of wanting constitutionally limited government. They were the ones who backed the Tea Party, not the Democrats, that weak attempt 10, 12 years ago to go back to constitutionalism in some form, at least. Third, the Republican candidates that were just put up are young, pugnacious, learned, and some of them even who lost, I hope, come back because they'll do better presumably next time. If the Democrats aren't stopped, if their own corruption of the elections is stopped, they are the main corruptors of elections. So those who care about corruption of election integrity really have to restrain the Democrats. They were the ones who said Bush stole the election from Gore. They were the ones who denied that Bush won in 2000. They denied that Bush won in 2004. They claimed that they stole the election from Kerry in Ohio. Of course, they had no problems with 08 and 2012 because Obama won. But then Hillary was an election denier, and all her allies were election deniers after 2016. So if we're going to get in a pissing match about which party is election deniers, the Democrats are the biggest ones. And that's not an excuse for any Republican to deny. But it's not election denying that's going on here. Each party and each candidate should proudly stand up and say, I want election integrity. And you cannot take that view and collapse it into, well, you're an election denier, and therefore in the future, you're not going to want any elections. I mean, that's kind of Rob's argument. He literally believes if anyone questions the integrity of an election, they don't want any future elections. And to me, this is just the primacy of democracy run riot. This is just unlimited majority rule run riot. That our primary rights are not the right to vote. The right to vote should be a secondary, tertiary thing. The key is we're voting for people who protect our rights. I believe the only reason elections are so important to people these days is precisely because the government is unrestrained and can do any damn thing it wants. So it's very, very important now who we elect. But it's an increasingly corrupt system because there's so much democracy. So that's my main argument, that we need more constitutional republicanism and far less democracy.
If I can pipe in with two things, I think we should open it for more discussion, but there's two things I just want to pipe in there with very quickly, which is when I use the term election denier, I have something very specific in mind, which I defined, which is it is people who believe that Donald Trump won the 2020 election. And I actually linked to in my things on this, the Washington Post did a rundown. They looked at Republican candidates and they looked at basically, did they either refuse to affirm, you know, when asked what that Biden won, or did they actively go out and say that they thought Biden didn't win in 2020, that Trump actually won? And that's what I mean by election denial, that you denied specifically the 2020 election. And as you admit, Richard, there's no evidence that Trump actually won that election. And if you look at most of the claims being made, it's, you know, there's a little bit, there's a few votes here and there that were suspect, but every claim that was made that was big enough to, actually, they had a whole series of lawsuits that they filed that were thrown out. And the reason the lawsuits were thrown out.
This is not relevant to what we're discussing because let me stipulate to everything you just said. It still does not justify characterizing an entire party as election deniers.
Well,
bent on suppressing all future elections. It is a gargantuan leap to go from that. There is definitely fraud in elections. In the case of Trump, there were at least six states where it was questionable. But the idea that people question it, the idea that people investigate or wish to investigate the integrity of elections, you would think from someone who really loves democracy that they would want to make sure that
elections are fair. Okay, Richard, you have to let me talk here.
That elections are fair and clean, and they're not always fair and clean. The question is whether they materially change the outcome. And election denier is just such a broad blanket. These are not election deniers. They're people who want elections that have integrity, that have minimal fraud, as much as minimal as possible. It is not true that the Democratic Party cares about that. The Democratic Party is the loosest.
I'm not going to use the word lie here, but I am going to say that I have written extensively about this and people can look at it.
That's not an argument.
The people here...
I've read your essays.
Give Rob a chance.
Quiet and listen to me for 2 minutes, and we can go on to discussion, okay? The 2 minutes here are this. There were people who came out and made flagrantly wrong claims about widespread fraud in the 2020 election. So what? And there are people, Fincham and Eric, you got to listen to me, Richard, okay? If you want to have a discussion, it goes both ways. Mark Fincham in Arizona is a great example where he made totally arbitrary claims of fraud in the 2020 election and declared his desire to overturn the result. If you make an arbitrary claim, you're not asking questions, you're not analyzing it, you're making up conspiracy theories that are provably wrong. If you do that and then declare your desire to overturn the election, that makes you an enemy of elections. Now, that gets me to the second thing I want to say, which is, and it's going to be fruitless to go back and forth because you have your own unique set of facts and they're different than the facts on the ground.
But fruitless to me, no.
The one thing I want to say about elections is you say elections are secondary or tertiary. I think elections are on the first tier because they are our way of controlling who governs us. You know, if you can't have elections, I think elections are not the end. They're not the goal. The goal is liberty. But I think elections are an indispensable means to that end that you can't do without elections, because without elections, there's no way to, you know, rein in the only way you can rein in the people who govern you is if you're allowed to kick them out. And if they go around saying, we're going to overturn the results, we're going to send a different slate of electors, which people actually tried to do, then they're saying, we're not going to let your vote count.
People who lie about election results or whether there's fraud or not are not the people I'm defending. What I'm saying is to cite cases like that and conclude, as you do, that therefore you should only vote for Democrats, which is exactly what you said. In your readings, only vote for Democrats. That's what you said. Basically, you were advocating one-party rule.
I said only vote for Democrats in the context of an election.
You're not letting me finish. You said elections are for controlling those who govern us. No, it isn't. If you elect Biden, you have an uncontrollable fascist dictator telling you what to do. What's that to do with controlling us? We need constitutional limits on what these people do. And just because you elect them doesn't mean anything. Let me remind people that after the Civil War, until World War I, women didn't even have the right to vote in America. And many others didn't have the right to vote. We had more liberties. We had no Federal Reserve. We had no income tax. We had the gold standard. We had free trade. And only less than half the people could vote. Why? Because elections really didn't matter. Why? Because we had our liberties. What we have today is unlimited democratic rule, and I most hold responsible those who tout Democrats. The Democrats are on record for being universal suffrage, no limits whatever, no election day, no limits on the Supreme Court, pack the Supreme Court, no electoral college, no filibuster. They want to remove every effing limit to majority rule. And that's why I'm so incensed about this, because if we care about individual rights and government protecting our rights, we cannot be touting unlimited democratic rule, let alone by the party which is most responsible for this. It is undeniable that the Democratic Party, with its long, horrendous history of racism and slavery and Jim Crow and the KKK, even to this day, they are the biggest advocates of the slave plantation called the welfare state. The idea that anyone would stand up and say, vote only for them, especially after the last 2 years, because I found some people in the Trump wing who think the election was stolen from him, is beyond the pale. It is a ridiculous argument.
Well, Richard, I want to say I because I had to clear this up because I've written all this stuff. And so, you know, you're presenting my view.
That's not an argument. So don't refer to things you've written. I've written about things, too.
Richard, let's talk. This is a conversation. It has to go both ways. All right.
It's not an argument that I've written stuff.
What I'm saying is it's an argument that I'm saying that I have actually articulated this. So you're summarizing me incorrectly. So when I said vote for Democrats, I meant in this election, in an election they were projected to lose badly, and it was in order not to get unlimited rule by the Democratic Party, it was to get exactly the result that we got. I wanted gridlock.
No,
I wanted neither side to have a powerful majority.
Sorry to say, but that's just insincere, because you said also you expected a red wave, because you wrote afterwards that you were surprised there was not a red wave. Which means ahead of time, you thought most people were going to vote for Republicans. It was only after the fact that you went in and said, I'm glad they didn't.
I refer to my writings, because I can point you to what I wrote before the election, where I said
the American people cannot be corrupt two days before you write.
You're just making stuff up. Okay, so please don't make up stuff about what I'm writing.
You're referring to what you wrote, citing what you wrote.
Let Rob answer.
No, I'm citing what I wrote because I want to show you that I actually did not say what you're imputing, but I don't think shouting back and forth.
Can I try to move on?
People can go look at what I wrote. That's fine.
You said only vote for Democrats, and you said you expected a red wave, which means beforehand you thought the American people would largely vote for Republicans. After they didn't, you said that they were praiseworthy, which means you would have thought beforehand they were disgusting because they were about to vote for a bunch of Republicans. You changed your view, and it's because you're biased.
I don't even know what point you're making there. Look, Scott, let's take control of this. Let's go back to some semblance of an open discussion with the audience here.
Yeah, we can. I want to bring Roger in just a moment. Rob, I'm curious because one of the things you did say in your piece was that you were confident that now that these people lost, that there was hope going forward. And, you know, I know you're skeptical of DeSantis. Where do you see yourself like in 2024? You're just going to base it on who the nominees are?
I'm going to base it on who the nominees are. I am not wild about DeSantis. I think so. DeSantis, what's part of what's going on here is that, you know, Richard mentioned the Tea Party. I was really involved in the Tea Party. It was a great moment, you know, in politics because it was this sort of grassroots rebellion in favor of a pro-liberty agenda. But what happened is the Tea Party sort of carried us up to 2014, and then there was a change and there was a switch in the Republican agenda. And there has been an attempt in the last, you know, basically starting 2015, 2016, using Trump as a vehicle, although he himself is not an ideological guy. There's been an attempt to advocate for this nationalist conservatism. And I think DeSantis is sort of in the same vein in that the premise of the nationalist conservatism is we should give up fighting against government power. We should have said try to get government power so we can use it to, and the phrase they use is to reward our friends and punish our enemies. So there's this idea we should use it to promote, you know, our agenda and including a religious agenda. And I see DeSantis as sort of like the less erratic and more reasonable way of doing that. So I think a lot of Republicans are looking to him because he's the guy who, you know, threatens to take away Disney's to exert power over the Disney Corporation using the power of government over Disney Corporation because they advocated against the piece of election he wanted, a piece of legislation he wanted. So that's the sort of thing that they see. Oh, he's somebody who will use the power of government to promote our agenda, but he'll do it in a more reasonable and less inflammatory and less erratic way than Donald Trump. And so that's why I'm skeptical of DeSantis. But I think that's one of the issues here is that I see the Republicans as having actually turned away from the traditional Reaganite small government agenda to the extent they had one. It was always, you know, they always made a lot of promises and rarely delivered very much on that. But they at least
Can I say something, please?
Sure.
There's no filibuster here. I know we want to get rid of the filibuster. Yeah. I was a Reaganite. The objectivists were not. Ayn Rand and Peikoff criticized Reagan. They didn't want Reagan. So I'm on record of long been a Reaganite and got shit from that from objectivists for a long time. So I'm not saying I like the Trump version of the Republican Party. When Trump was in the primaries in 2016, I wanted Cruz. But you have described yourself as a never Trumper. Now, if I get that right, that means regardless of who he goes up against, you would vote for the other person. That means you would endorse, I assume you did, I didn't read your stuff at the time, Hillary against him in 2016 and Biden against him in 2020. So we have Biden and it's already bad. But if you had had your way, you would have had Hillary and Biden. I mean, I just don't understand this. I do see exactly what you say, that there is nationalism on the right and socialism on the left. And I've long argued that if we keep this up, we're going to combine the two and get national socialism. That is exactly what we're moving toward. That's what Weimar Germany was. That's what Leonard so presciently forecast in Ominous Parallels. So I know that Trump, they're protectionists. I was against their protectionism. But one of the things Trump did that was good was to not remain in these forever wars. And I know you don't like that. You want the Republican Party to remain neocon. You want the Republican Party to remain in wars all over the place. That, to me, that and the corporate tax cuts were the only good thing Trump did. But yes, I'm not endorsing nationalism. But to be a never Trumper is basically to endorse these Democrats, these awful Democrats. I don't understand that.
It was to say that being for one thing, I think Donald Trump clearly committed two impeachable offenses for which he was impeached, never convicted. But I think he was absolutely guilty on both of those. That was why I was against, because I anticipated he would do exactly those things. He would abuse the powers of the presidency. Yeah,
yeah. So,
Jack, were you trying to get in?
You're confirming that you recommended Hillary and Biden.
Recommending Hillary is sort of Biden as a weak alternative.
No, but you,
because I thought he would be a weak leader, which is true.
Yeah, I've read your reading.
Hillary was a bitter pill to look at, and I think I sat that one out.
Well, okay, then you're not I can't understand what you're writing then. You wrote, I'm a never Trumper. You said that.
The context of Never Trump and the Never Trump movement was this idea that there were the context for it, the way the word came into existence is there were people in the Republican Party who opposed Trump during the primaries.
When
he got the nomination, the expectation was, well, you'll come around. You know, you'll have to, if it's him or Hillary, you're going to have to come around. You will eventually accept him. And it was a statement that Never Trump was a statement, we won't accept him.
But it's that's not the point, Rob. The point is, if you're a Never Trumper, you by default support Hillary and Biden. That's undeniable.
Okay, sure.
And that is just talk about an objectivist perspective. You cannot have an objectivist perspective that would promote Hillary and Biden.
The chairman of the Orthodox group.
You just said Leonard Peikoff's not an objectivist.
I mean, the fact that your own book
and ARI is Dr. Brooks.
Your views now. I mean, your own book is in the same camp, loves what you're writing now, because they're also against the Republican Party. It is just maniacal in my view. But there is a principle called the perfect being the enemy of the good. That's what you're doing, Rob. When you find defects in the Republican Party, I don't have a problem with that. But you have to compare them to the other party. You have to compare them to the other candidate. And on all scores, Hillary and Biden were disasters.
Part of this is based on the idea that presidents are not philosopher kings. They don't have power to impose their entire agenda. You look at what they can do as president. And, you know, I think it's unambiguous that as president, using his presidential powers, Donald Trump abused those powers. He went beyond what legitimate powers were. Yeah, I think he took the one pro-liberty party and put it on an anti-liberty direction. I think he was disastrous. So that was why I opposed him, because I thought, you know, in a way, I opposed him even more so because he was a Republican and because he was destroying undermining the principles of the Republican Party and making him an anti-liberty party.
This is what I mean about anti-liberty goes a bit far, but not sufficiently pro-liberty as well. This is what I mean about the perfect being the enemy of the good. It's like saying the following.
Trump is not imperfect. He was bad.
Trump is not Reagan. Therefore, vote for Hillary. That is just ridiculous. Trump is not Reagan, which I agree with. Therefore, vote for Biden. After 2 years of Biden wrecking the country and putting us on, as he even put it, an Armageddon path to nuclear war, you're still saying vote for Democrats across the board. That's exactly what you wrote. Vote for only for Democrats. By the way, you have not answered my question yet. What? If your main thing is election denial, why aren't you anti all the Democrats who have been denying elections since Gore?
I am.
But you're saying vote for the Democrats.
Well, okay, there's two things there. So I'm against Stacey Abrams, okay? I'm against, because she's a more recent example. Against McAuliffe. I didn't like McAuliffe because in running in Virginia, because he was a guy who's been... Now, on the other hand, here's the thing, though. When you talk about these judge up to 2000, one of the things that happened in 2000 is Al Gore, you know, whined about how, you know, whined about the election and fought it and refused to concede. But... he actually then did concede, and more than that, he presided as vice president. He presided over the vote in the Senate that recognized the. Let me finish that sentence, please. He presided over the vote in the Senate that confirmed George W. Bush's election victory.
Right? Yes,
and that's as opposed to Donald Trump, who basically egged on a mob to disrupt that very same vote and tried to get his own vice president. To throw out the election result.
The same Donald Trump who was on the stage at the inaugural shaking hands with Biden and just look it up, people.
Well, okay, Apparently, wait. I just mentioned relevant facts that you just throw out and ignore by saying something else.
No, okay?
The relevant fact was he asked Mike Pence to overturn the election result in the Senate.
The relevant fact is that for decades, the Democrats have been denying election results, including Hillary and Biden, who both said...
At this point, that's a two-quote-play argument, okay? The two-quote-play argument is, my guys did something bad, but look, the other guys did something bad. So
interrupting, so you don't want me to make my point, okay? Hillary and Biden, who you both supported... have been denying election results to Bush and to others for decades. Now, it's not my main issue. It's your main issue. I'm not saying it because it's a main issue to me. It's a main issue to you. You're the one saying, don't vote for Republicans because there's some people in the party who deny election results. That same principle applies to the Democrats. It makes no sense whatsoever as a distinguishing feature. The distinguishing feature is which party is violating our liberties more. The Democrats, without question, are doing that way more than the Republicans. So the idea of being biased toward the Democrats is inexplicable to me, frankly, for those who love liberty.
You are still mischaracterizing my position, which is it's not that, there were a couple of guys in the Republican Party who denied the election. It was that they were actually making specific plans and attempted 2000, and then were making specific plans for the future, get into positions where they could overturn future election results and promising to do so. And that is not a ridiculous thing I made up. It's a thing that's documented.
And here,
and like I said,
I do want to bring the audience in.
Good idea. Good idea, Scott.
Roger, thanks for joining us. You want to get in on this?
Oh my God. I was having so much fun listening to this. Now all I'm going to do is slow the pace down. Here's what I'll say. First of all, I think that you both would agree, and it sounds like you do, in the idea that that neither party is doing anything that would help advance liberty to a sufficient level that any of us on this stage and probably anybody in the audience listening would expect. And then, so then the argument is about, well, what do you do about that? And I personally see it as that you don't have to back a party that is not doing all the things that you would expect them to do. And the answer to that is not it's not this obvious, well, I'll just go vote for the other party. There is a third option of just staying out of it. And not voting is a vote. And I would give this example to illustrate it most, right? If you go back into the 60s, when Malcolm X was speaking about how, you can't trust, the white liberal, and essentially telling people not necessarily to abandon the Democratic Party, but not to just gift them the vote. If they're not giving them something that they want, then you don't vote for them. And I would argue that if you're Republican leaning, or if you're a staunch Republican, I would say that the most powerful thing that you could do is withhold your vote unless you're getting the small government, lower taxation, protection of individual liberties that the Republican Party once stood for, and tell them, hey, I know that the other party's not going to give me these things either, but if I can't count on you to do it, then I'm going to rally the troops to just not vote for you. And the outcome of that may very well be that you get something worse, but you do need to somehow shock the system. And I think that if both parties had the desire to keep their own side of the fence accountable for what they say that they stand for, I think we'd be in a better position. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're on the other side. It's that you're just trying to strategically wield thing back to a, you know, to a positive result. That's all I would.
Yeah.
Let me first take a shot at that quickly. Roger, I appreciate that. I think there's way too much emphasis spent on, like, where should I allocate my vote and should I withhold my vote? Believe me, these political parties and these candidates are not, I mean, some of them seem like they care. They're not holding their breath for that kind of thing. The history has been, in the case of the U.S. political parties, if we want to improve either one of them, and you could pick either one and say, I'm going to focus on them and try to improve them. The best way to do it is ideas. It's the intellectuals, it's the think tanks and others that get behind these candidates. And the voters are like the last ones who are asked, well, what do you think, you know, vote for me or not? And in that regard, the GOP itself was founded as the anti-slavery party. It was a one-issue party. But that's an idea. That was a powerful idea. And the Republican Party and the Democratic Party over the history has gotten worse or ill regarding liberty. So the best thing to do, and I would pick the Republican Party, as I've said, that they're the better party. We need to push them in a direction of more liberty. And the answer to that is not, punish them periodically because they're not perfect or they're not Reaganite. Even the objectivists didn't like Reagan, as I said, and then say vote for Democrats. I would characterize the two parties as following. The GOP is anti-socialist. Trump himself said, we will never become a socialist country. Okay, but he didn't say we're going to become a capitalist country. We need a party that says we're going to become capitalist, and here's how to go there. Now, the difference is the Democrats are pro-socialist. And that is no small difference. Neither of them are pro-capitalist. But the difference is one of them is anti-socialist, and the other one is pro-socialist. So the idea of recommending the second one is not good for liberty.
So where I want to agree with Roger is I think that people put pressure on this. I think people put too much emphasis on elections. My interest in this election was specifically I did not want people getting in positions of power where they could overturn election results, period. That was like the one issue of this election I cared deeply about. That was an actual practical thing that they were going to be put in a position to do. All right. So that was a practical thing that they could do. And this idea of punishing people and they'll get better, I don't think happens. But what I do want to say is I think it is true. Elect people to put too much eggs in the basket of an election. How could you vote for this person? And I do agree the ideological battles are more important. And so that's part of why the context is for this election, though. Is that part of my ideological battle I've been fighting personally, you know, day in, day out for the last 5-6 years has been against the nationalist conservatives who I think they actually are socialists. They say they're against socialism, but their actual premise, if you look at the deepest premise of socialism, is that society is more important than the individual meaning of socialism. And the nationalist conservatives are absolutely explicitly in favor of the idea that society is more important than the individual and the individual right, the rights of the individual should be subordinated to the wider needs and desires of the society. And so that's, I think, the big ideological battle I've been fighting. Because I do think that, you know, you had I agreed for many years that the Republican Party was the better party, but it has been deeply infected, I think more deeply than most people want to admit, with these idea. So if ideology is important, the ideology creeping into the Republican Party has been extremely corrosive.
I mean, I would put it that the Democrats are no less nationalist than the Republicans. So they're pox on both their houses. If you look at it as a political spectrum thing, both parties in this century have moved to the left. And Rob, what I'm saying you're missing is the Democrats have moved twice as far to the left as the Republicans. So the gap between them really matters. And what you tend to focus us on is where are the Republicans and how far have they come from Reagan? I agree with all that. I think it's terrible. But elections are about choices, binary. It's very binary. That's how the U.S. system is set up. We don't have a parliamentary system where seats are occupied by those who get, proportional voting and stuff like that. So the gap, what do they say on the subway? Mind the gap. You're not minding the gap. You're ignorant of the gap or you're ignoring the gap or you're not just that. You're saying pick the Democrats only. That is exactly what you wrote. And you believe that if anyone in the Republican Party questions the integrity of the elections and questions whether there's that they don't want any future elections. Even if some of them are in conspiracy theory, which I don't want, I want both parties to stand up and say there should be no election fraud. And I don't know, I don't have a problem with that. And it's not the same thing as saying this person doesn't want elections in the future, which is kind of what you've been writing. You've been writing that anyone who questions whether there's fraud in elections don't want future elections. That's ridiculous.
I've summed up my position. I don't think it's by me restating again what I actually wrote. So,
okay.
All right, that's fair. We're actually going to go to Atlas Society founder David Kelly. Welcome. Do you have, I don't know if you're able to unmute. If you had a question for Rob or Richard. I guess, you know, Rob, just to differentiate some of what Richard's saying, I think there's some of what happens is like these press people will go and they'll kind of force you to say, oh, I believe that there's no election fraud. When for all we know, you know, it's not that we don't have evidence per se of widespread election fraud, but some of it's just, you know, a result of seeing like the Democrats use the Justice Department to accuse Trump of being a Russian agent. And so there is a bit of skepticism. And so we just don't want to be forced to say, oh, you know, we're for a blank check to Ukraine or we're, you know, we're never going to question the election. It just, you know, there's almost like the societal intimidation to say you have to say that for us to not consider you friend.
Well, actually, so I cover this, you know, this is my job. I cover this. And so I read these things, the what the reporter, and it's not the sort of caricature you're putting out there that you actually. And they will ask. Right. They'll ask questions.
Go ahead.
2020 election. Right. And they'll ask these questions. They won't say, do you think there might have been election fraud? I mean, you know, because somebody could say, yes, there might have been election fraud, but, you know, it didn't rise to the level of changing the results. So they will ask specific questions intended to get this out. And the other thing is, in a lot of the cases I'm talking about, this is not a subtle thing, right? It's not, oh, a guy raised some questions. In a lot of these cases I'm talking about, it is a guy came out with, you know, totally arbitrary conspiracy theories, which the minute you brought them into court and you subjected them to the rules of evidence in a courtroom, they were thrown out because they were found to be, you know, utterly without basis. So, and then people go on to continue spouting them and to continue saying the same things. There was a great interview done by Scott Pelley, I think, on 60 Minutes with Mark Fincham, where he starts asking him specifics, you know, because Mark Fincham made these broad statements about there's election fraud. He says, well, okay, well, specifically what happened? And Fincham had nothing. He basically just babbled. He had no answer to the actual specifics of his claims. And that's the sort of thing I'm talking about, where if you say there was fraud in the election and somebody says, oh, really? What happened? And you're like, well, I kind of feel there was, right? You have not actually asked questions. You have not actually thought, you're not actually asking, offering a thoughtful contribution on this. You're just throwing off what you feel off the top of your head. And that's the sort of thing that I was advocating, that I'm continuing to advocate against. But I don't think I have to, because those people mostly lost their elections. Now, one thing I do want to throw in, we mentioned the earlier issue of abortion earlier, and I have not mentioned much about this because I didn't think it was going to be a big issue. I thought it was too far early in the year that it wouldn't have that much impact on this. And I've seen some evidence that I actually did. Now, one of the pieces of evidence that I think is actually a great thing is abortion was actually on the state ballot in a number of different states. There was, I think Kentucky tried to put into its constitution a provision saying that there is no recognized right to abortion, and that was defeated. The other one was, there were a couple of cases where, you know, a couple of states that put a constitutional protection for abortion rights. And I also saw that, somebody's breaking out the vote totals, the vote differentials by, like, married men, unmarried men, married women, and unmarried women. And by a huge margin, unmarried women went way far to the Democratic side. And I think that's pending further investigation of the polls, I think that's at least a prima facie. That's a signal. You know, unmarried women are the people who have the most direct interest in the abortion issue. And I think that is in doubt to basically cast votes, especially on the state level,
Scott faded there at the end.
Are we done?
You want to make a quick statement before we go to David?
Just a quick question, a quick point about conspiracy theory. I mean, conspiracy theories seem to be ubiquitous. It's not one side or the other. The entire Russian hoax that it got Trump elected went on for 2 or 3 years. And I believe the two, I know we differ on this, Rob, but the two impeachment attempts were attempts to overturn the results of the election. So I know they heard, I know they happened after Trump was elected, but those were two and defeated, by the way. There was no evidence at all. He would have been impeached and convicted. There was no evidence at all. And yet it hamstrung his presidency. So there are various ways to overturn the results of an election. But the fact that both parties have their conspiracy theorists, the fact that both parties, and I would say more so the Democrats, reject election results by calling them illegitimate presidents, it is a pattern of the last 20 years. There's no doubt about it. There's definitely a pattern in the U.S., and it's part of an eroding belief in constitutional limits, frankly, I think, that both parties do not trust the results of elections, not just because they're sore losers, but because these elections are becoming looser. They are becoming less... There is like less regulated, like the border is less regulated. And I'm just saying here tonight, I just want to stress, the solution to that is not to only vote for Democrats. I mean, that is just bad advice, really bad advice, because they're the looser of the two parties on these issues. Literally on election issues, they're very loose.
There is no evidence that elections have gotten less accurate or less fair or that there's more fraud. I think there's way more fraud. I mean, in the Chicago machine in the 60s was way, way, way more frequently fraudulent in its election. Vote early, vote often was the old mantra in Chicago, dead people voting. They were way looser and way more flagrantly fixed elections back then. I think the idea that there's anything significant, that it's a significant amount of fraud in today's elections, or that things are too loose and unregulated, I don't think there's any basis in evidence for any of that.
And
we know, because people went over the 2020 election with a fine-tooth comb. They held audits looking for evidence of this. They didn't find it.
And I'm not saying it's a huge problem. I'm just saying it is a problem if one party is accused of that stance and all their victories are dismissed as illegitimate. That's a problem.
I didn't make Republicans say these things. Okay. I didn't make that up. It just happened. Okay. I'm just pointing out that it happened. And I think that the both sides thing, you know, that the other side does it too. But, you know, when somebody is actually saying, I'm going to be in the position where I could try to overturn the election and I'm promising to do that, you have to take them at their word and take that seriously and not just say, oh, well, you know, Democrats said something in 2000. That's not a counterbalance to that.
Let me quote Rob Trzynski. My recommendation is this: vote for Democrats and only Democrats to ensure that you will be able to vote again. Unquote. That's unbelievable. It's
well, on that, I went on to add, you know, appropriate qualifications, but that is exactly what I think is true.
Yeah, it's basically the premise that if you vote Republican, you are voting for authoritarian end to elections. At one point, you actually cited Chavez in Venezuela, equating Republicans with Chavez, who was a Democratic.
I didn't do that. I don't, or if I did, it was a long time ago.
Wow. No, in the last three essays.
No, I didn't mention Chavez at all.
Wow.
Well, let's move on from that and give David a chance to ask his question. Thank you for your patience.
Thanks. Can you hear me now? I had to sign out and sign in to get.
Yes, you sound good. Heard.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Thank you. First of all, I don't follow elections in the detail that Richard and Rob do. So I've been listening with great interest. On the other hand, as a philosopher, I think the the liberal philosophy, properly understood, and the founder's vision was liberty is the first value, democracy is the means to an end. So, but I take it that's a point of common agreement. So let me just go on to my questions. And Rob, there are questions for you. They're not, I side with Richard, but please don't take these as hostile questions. They're really coming out of curiosity. Question one, in light of your Krasinski letter about vote Democratic, would you have been happier if the Democrats had kept the House, which it seems unlikely they will, as well as the Senate, and we had another 2 years of unified government, unified Democratic government? That's question one. Question two is, in the run-up to the election, President Biden was often saying that this issue is not just about policy questions or other issues, but it's about democracy itself. And some of your the points you've made in that Deeper Democracy article of yours, and which you defended in a later article after the election, sounded very similar. Do you have, so here's the question, do you have substantial disagreements with Biden's case? Or, you know, and if so, how would you, what are your main differences?
Oh, thanks. Boy. Okay. I'm gonna punt on the Biden thing, because I haven't, his most recent speech I haven't even looked at. He did one in Philadelphia a while back, which was kind of okay. Generally, I agreed with it. He used a sort of the thing that he called it a sort of semi-fascism, which I thought was such a, people use the term, Richard uses it, people use the term so loosely. You know, no, Joe Biden is not a fascist dictator, and Trump is not a fascist, but, you know, if you say sort of semi-fascism, it's so, I disagreed with that as being sort of so wide and loose as to be pretty meaningless. Now, as to whether I would have been happier if Democrats had maintained a majority or gotten a bigger majority, no, I don't think I would be. I don't think there's very few things I could be happier about in this election, because it leaves no side with the ability to do anything big. And the one thing the only thing I'm dissatisfied about in this election is I think if the Democrats had lost, it would have prompted. It actually had a whole article on this drafted, ready to go, and had to throw it out. If they had lost, it might have prompted a reckoning with the woke side. Because I had a whole article saying, you know, this is what you get for backing the woke culture warriors and for backing your own extreme crazies. You know, there's a crazy wing to the left. This is what you get for not distancing yourself from your own crazies. We're not going to have that reckoning on the left this time.
Well, just to follow up, what would you expect if everyone had followed your advice, not just the objectivists, not our small constituency, but many more people had voted Democratic and kept the Democrats in control of the House?
Well, so, but okay, I always have in mind that if I advise people to do something, not, you know, the 20 million people, 30 million people are not going to follow my advice. So that's part of the context for it, okay? But, you know, I think if... So the context for this was that, you know, I expected, and there was the expectation at the time that Republicans were going to have a major victory. So I was saying, we need to prevent that from happening. And that was the reason for the advice.
Well, to me,
that was part of the context. I spelled it out.
If I could just follow up on one last point. You said you should vote on the issue. I think this was from your follow-up article. Yeah. Vote on the issue in play at the moment. And you said that was the democracy. But you also made a good point, which I largely agree with, that first of all, philosophy doesn't dictate a view about elections. There are too many factors. And years ago, I stopped listening to objectivists about elections because there was so much rationalism involved. But be that as it may, you were saying don't try to manipulate or don't try to massage the election, just vote your conscience. And so, but yet, am I right that you were counting on your advice going to a small number of people who would not affect the outcome? In which case, that's a strategic kind of analysis, not a substantive one.
No, okay. So that's a really interesting, subtle question you're asking there. So let me untangle that, because I didn't even think that through. I think I did a little follow. I didn't think through that specific implication, except in the, so I did it the day before the election. I did a little follow up, a little Q&A in response to various objections. And the, what I said in there is if the people were expecting a massive Democratic wave, if they were expecting Democrats to win handily, I said, we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? So part of the what you do in recommending, making an election recommendation is you take, you, I think you have to take into account the question of, well, you know, put it this way, election denial would not be the issue of the election, Republican election denial would not be the central issue of the election if Democrats were poised to win handily, right? So it wouldn't be a real threat. It's only a threat in the context of these people could actually win their, you know, so for example, if McGovern, if in 1972, McGovern was like 30% in the polls and it was obvious that Nixon was going to have a complete landslide, would Ayn Rand have felt the need to go out and tell people vote for Nixon, right? Would she have written anti-Nixonites for Nixon? Well, I don't think she would have. It wouldn't have been an issue. It wouldn't have been a question, right? So, we do take into account, it's, I wouldn't call it strategic voting, but I think we do the context of, you know, when you ask what's the issue of this election, part of that question is what is the likely outcome as things stand right now, right? So, for example, if I think I've given enough examples there, right? You know, if McGovern were clearly going to lose, there'd be no reason to recommend voting for Nixon. It's only in the context that it's a close election, it could go either way, that becomes a relevant issue to talk about. And that was the context here. It's only in the context that it looks as if a bunch of Republicans who want to deny the 2020 election result and want to overturn future elections, a bunch of those people could get elected to positions of power. Well, that was the context in which to make the recommendation.
May I just say that we have to be principled about our politics. And in the objectivist context, we have to be principled about saying the key thing is liberty and individual rights, not this unlimited voting power. And frankly, it sounds to me like a father who says something like, dear teenage son, drive 80 miles an hour, but I don't worry about it because the cops will stop you. I mean, it's just not principled, well, right?
No, dude, that's the argument I was arguing against.
Let me finish.
Yeah.
Recommending to do some reckless thing in this context, voting for Democrats who are ruining the country. But don't worry about it because, you know, someone will stop it a lot. It's just not a principled way of talking about politics. It's no different than that father recommending reckless behavior, hoping somebody else will stop him. You're still responsible for advocating the reckless behavior. You're not bailed out by the fact that somebody else might restrain you later, might restrain Biden later. Well, I certainly hope so. But the key is to get as many of those people out as possible. Not to hope that they'll be. Yeah.
You cannot make election recommendations while ignoring the whole context of what is the likely result of the election going to be. What is a live issue in the election versus what's a dead issue? If there weren't a lot of Republicans advocating this one thing and in the position, potentially getting in the position to act on it,
right,
and then it would not be a live issue. Right. It would not be something to motivate your vote. I would have written a completely different article.
And I did notice that, I mean, David asked this, but you did say you thought Biden was right, this is after the election, to say, as he did on the eve of the election, that democracy is on the ballot. That is exactly your view. Your view is, unless you restrain the Republicans, we're going to lose democracy. It's a Biden argument. It's a ridiculous argument. Democracy was not on the ballot. But I have to say,
sometimes I have to suffer through the fact that Democrats, I agree with something a Democrat says. Sometimes I have to suffer through the fact that Yaron Brook agrees with what I said about the election. The place where I sum it up, I also add, you know, I add all the appropriate qualifications and say things like, okay, you know, we will not immediately lose the right to vote, but we're taking a step down the road towards further conflict. And that's why you're drive 80 miles an hour, but don't worry, the cops will stop you. that's precisely what I'm arguing against, because that was the argument in favor of ignoring the election people on the right, the election deniers on the right. Yeah. Is, oh, don't worry. Yeah, well, they have these awful conspiracy theories, but they won't really be able to act on it.
Well, then if
I want to stop them now rather than stopping that, waiting for it to get farther down the road. That was my whole argument.
If that's true, then you do think the Democrats are largely innocuous, and I just don't see evidence of that. By the way, not to be on record for misquoting Rob, but you did compare him to Chavez. So I found the quote. Here it is in the last week. I read three essays he wrote in the last week. And from one of them, it says, what Trump intends is a purge of the military, a key stage in Chavez's takeover in Venezuela. You specifically said Trump is a would-be Chavez. Wow.
Well, I've forgotten about that because
The fact that Donald Trump might want to get rid of Milley. There are very bad generals at the Pentagon, not all of them, but Milley.
I wrote an article. I'm citing articles there of people talking about a plan being floated by people in Trump's circle to literally, quote, fire all generals. So this is,
You just told me I misquoted you by saying you compared it to Chavez.
I compared that.
You forget your writings. Your writings of the past week. It's the past
week. Okay. Well, it's a fair comparison, though, on the facts of the idea of purging the military.
So first you tell me it's a banana republic thing.
Can you deny that? Wow.
You start by saying, wait, I misquoted.
Is it a good idea to purge all the generals from the military, Richard?
Now you're saying, you did quote
the generals. Is that a good idea? Yes or no?
He didn't say fire all the generals. He said fire ones like Milley.
The quote I have, read the piece. The quote is somebody who said literally, it wasn't Trump himself, it was one of his advisors who said literally, fire all the generals.
I did read the piece, Rob, and you said Chavez, and when I told you that 2 minutes ago, you denied it. So don't tell me to read your pieces. I read them very closely. You don't read mine.
Read the article I linked to where and one of Trump's advisors says, fire all the generals.
And
that's what I'm responding to. Is it fair to compare that to the actions of a banana republic?
Since Chavez is the poster boy of Obama and AOC and the Democrats, they want democratic socialism. The Republicans don't. It is really rich.
There are Democrats other than Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's
really rich to compare a Republican to a would-be Chavez. That is, and to be so pro-Democrat,
the
Democrat socialists are in this country who love Chavez, and you compare Trump to Chavez.
Richard, if you're off of your soapbox there, the facts that I gave were there's a plan to fire all the generals because they were considered insufficiently politically loyal.
That is
a valid comparison. You haven't refuted that at all. You haven't answered it at all. I'm putting a guy who actually said that. That's not a conspiracy theory.
It's not Trump's view, and you know it.
It's one of his advisors who said it. That's what I said in the article. You could call it a conspiracy theory, but all the facts are there, and you can't refute them.
Trump is Chavez.
I would like to let John answer or ask his question. Thank you for your patience, John.
Thank you. Number one, I'd say that you forget that Trump purged the military, and this is a little bit of get back. Now, just to change to a different subject or the other question is...
That's just false.
No, I don't believe that's the case. We can talk about it another day. We all heard about the Maricopa County vote suppression by way of 20% of the machines in the Republican precincts not working. Perhaps you saw Kerry Lake go into downtown Phoenix and find that all of the machines in those precincts were working. This is perhaps the greatest example of vote suppression in American history. and ironically, it benefited the Democrats. Of course, I say ironic because they constantly cite imaginary vote suppression of peoples of color, of course, without ever citing any actual examples. And then we have Veterans Day tomorrow, and we have the registrar of voters in Maricopa County and the county supervisor telling us that Well, the votes won't be done counting until next week. And there's a question whether they're going to count tomorrow, Veterans Day. Do you suppose that all the volunteers that would normally want to watch the vote counting, they're going to go there instead of to their family parties for Veterans Day? So what's going to happen at the Registrar of Voters tomorrow? Will there be auditing?
I heard it's going to go past this weekend.
Yeah, they said next week.
Well, Arizona clearly has a
terrible... That videotape of the two Maricopa County election officials standing there. I mean, one guy has got a wrinkled suit, a wrinkled shirt. He needs a shave, and he hasn't combed his hair, and he needs a haircut. And he's the head of Maricopa voting. You know, that's how he presents himself on the most important day of his life. You know, then we've got
the schlubby suit is definitely the smoking gun for election fraud.
Well, you know what? Go ahead and make fun of it, but it's not beside the point. The guy is a schlub professionally too. This is the second election in a row he did it. Now today, the right wing pundits are missing the point when they talk about the delay in the counting. They don't realize that delay in counting is essential if you want to cheat. You got an insiders at the Registrar of Voters who are feeding information to one side while depriving the other side of it. And then the one side goes out and fabricates ballots to make up the difference, to offset it. Meanwhile, today, the right-wing pundits are nodding and saying, well, this is to deprive Carrie Lake of the publicity of a winner. They're idiots. The public employees at the Registrar of Voters they're holding back on reporting the number of ballots and the candidates' percentages of the count from the general public and from the Republicans. And, you know, I'm repeating myself, but with the other hand, they're giving the information to the Democrat cheaters who are feverishly fabricating fake ballots in the days between and after, because they got inside information that the Republicans don't have. And they got conveniently a federal holiday tomorrow.
John, give Rob a chance to answer.
Well, I have only one answer. Prove it. Where's your evidence? You made a whole bunch of claims there. Where is your evidence for those? There's speculation on your part.
Of course there is. But there's never been any cheating before, and there's never been any proof of cheating either, right? Don't be ridiculous, Rob.
All right. Give him we're trying to be respectful here.
You made a whole series of complaints about fabricating fake ballots. Well, where is the evidence for it?
Suppose that's
speculation on your part.
Suppose you're sitting in a game of cards with a guy across, and he's, you know, cards are coming out of his sleeve. And he says, hey, show me your cards. And you say, wait a minute. You show me your cards. You show me your cards first. So you sit there harumphing because the cheater has to see your cards first so he can slip some out of his sleeve. But you, the non-cheaper, you know this, and you refuse to show your cards. So what do? In rural Arizona, county registrars, they aren't stupid. They've started holding back their votes. So they're harumphing at each other. They know what's going on in Maricopa, and they're refusing to release their ballots.
So this is a great example.
You go to court, you tell the judge.
Let him answer, John.
Okay, you go to court, you tell a judge to get an order to simultaneously release all the results away.
Here's what I'm talking about.
John, give Rob a chance. I'm done.
This is the last thing on this issue that I want to talk about, which is this is an example of what I'm talking about. Is this sort of thing is absolutely endemic in the right of center media and in right of center politics right now, which is if you can simply come up with a bunch of vague suppositions and say, therefore, I know they're cheating and they're stealing, then you can justify saying, well, we're going to cheat and steal and return the results. And then you have a situation where there's no elections that can actually function anymore. And that's now I don't think we're right on the cusp of it. I think we're actually now, but we're on the road to going that. And you can hear when somebody comes on and says something like that, you have to think about what would that actually lead to if we took this stuff so seriously that we acted upon it and made politics. It would mean we could never have an election again because whatever the vote whatever happens in the vote, it will always be assumed to be some grand conspiracy, and nobody will ever accept the results. And what you have is chaos, and you have, you know, the end of voting. And Richard says voting secondary, but if you actually project, what would the end of voting mean? What would the end of votes that people, you know, accept, votes where candidates are willing to concede, and where people don't go out in the streets and riot over it? What would it actually mean to have the end of the vote? It would be a disaster for this
country. I did not, please do not do that. I did not say there should be an end to voting. I said it was not, I said it was not the primary right. The primary right
life, about voting, though,
to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The primary right is not to vote. The objectivist perspective on this is that the essence of good politics is good governance, and good governance is constitutionally limited republicanism in the service of liberty and rights. It's not democracy. So Rob's view, voting, elections, candidates, platforms, representatives, these are should be, in my view, in the objectivist view, means to an end. Simply means exactly to an end. And the end, let me finish, and the end is liberty, and we are losing our liberty. And the reason we're losing our liberty is not just because, as objectivists point out, we have opposite philosophic roots. It's also because people are deifying democracy. They're deifying unlimited suffrage. They're deifying unlimited majority rule. And they don't even care if the elections are fraudulent. They are such deifiers of elections that we're losing our liberty.
My elections are mean to the end. Without them, you cannot preserve liberty without having elections.
I didn't say without them.
No,
I didn't
say with what I'm saying repeat. Is, and then I'm saying
I didn't say no elections. I didn't say no voting. I said no unlimited majority rule, which is what Democrats and democracy theorists want. Right. And you're enabling them. You're enabling them. You're encouraging them.
But at the same time, you have people with these conspiracy theories about elections.
Oh, which, boy, come on. Every
you just heard one.
Every side has
been heard one state. Fine.
The
problem I have with, okay, we have these debates with Richard, and it's philosophically we're on the same wavelength, but the problem I have with these discussions is the old saying, you're entitled, everybody's entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts.
That's cute.
I find it, Richard, you have a lot of your own facts.
You cannot have unlimited majority rule, which is what the Democratic thesis is. That's what it is.
We're not talking about unlimited majority rule. We're talking about the integrity of the vote and whether people can overturn it based on speculation and their feelings about the election rather than an actual proof of facts.
You know better than anyone. The current Democratic Party believes in unlimited majority rule. They are Rousseauian. They are not Lockean. They are Rousseauian. You know that. The Republicans.
That's not true. Universal.
Wow.
Majority rule wing to it. There is a more old-fashioned liberal wing. I know these people. I talk to these people. There's a more old-fashioned liberal democratic wing that actually says, you know, for example, right now they're making a big deal about abortion, and the thing that a lot of them don't realize is this is the place where they see, yes, we have to have a limit on majority rule, right? They're actually putting in their state constitutions, we recognize this right, and the legislature can't violate this right. So, you know, there is a liberal democratic tradition.
You found
old-fashioned 20th century liberal tradition. That's not totally.
You found one issue on their side where they're not for majority rule. That's making the perfect the enemy of the good yet again.
Well, gentlemen, this has been a very lively discussion. I appreciate it. I know it got heated at times, but. You both are good objectivist thinkers, and even though you have different opinions, I think it's good, you know, we're able to air these out, and it is an example of open objectivism in action. I wanted to say, the Atlas Society is trying to raise enough revenue to cover next year's expanded events to promote Rand's ideas to young people in creative ways, but it's going to be a nail biter down to the final days of 2022. But for donations made this year, a major donor agreed to match all brand new donors. $5 contribution means $10 for our student initiatives. All lapsed donors, if you haven't donated since 2019 or longer, then your gift will be fully matched. Again, giving $5 means $10. in terms of the power that it does. All current donors, anything they gave over their 2021 giving will also be matched. So, you know, as you evaluate the whole year-end philanthropic activities, I hope you'll take into account the full scope of our impact and decide to include the Atlas Society in your end-of-year giving plans. Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, everyone, for coming.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Scott. And great discussion.